Chair, I'd like to call the Legislative Committee to order for September 12th. First of all, confirm the quorum.
Yes, quorum.
Thank you very much. Consent calendar consisting of item 2, A, and B.
So moved.
Moved by Licaro. Second by Halstead. Is there an objection to the motion? Motion passed without objection. Item 3, the 2015 Public Participation Plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ellen Griffin with MTC Legislation Public Affairs. This is an information item today. We just wanted to give you a heads up that we will be updating our public participation plan. It's required under state and federal law, and it's due for an update in advance of the next planning cycle. So this memo outlines the steps that we will take. You can see a timeline in the memo. We done a number of things already to check in and see how we can update our plan in a productive way. We had a good session with our Policy Advisory Council, got some good ideas there. We did do an evaluation of the last Plan Bay Area process that we will keep in mind. And we've been talking, getting feedback from you all, and we're meeting with stakeholder groups and so forth. We will be back in the with a draft PPP in November, and then we will release it for a 45-day comment period, and then be back in early 2015 with a revised draft. If there aren't significant changes, we'll be seeking your approval at that time. If there are changes, we'd need to resubmit it for a second public comment period. This is, I think, the key element is the part dealing with our long-range plan. It's essentially a plan for the plan. It's an administrative document, and we write it in a way that, you know, preserves flexibility. But it does. It's intended to give the public an idea of how they can engage in our process, not just for the plan, but for the TIP and other areas of the agency as well. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? All right, at this point, I have one speaker card. Ken Bukowski.
Hello, Ken Bukowski. You're a photographer here. Public outreach should definitely include video. You know, when you say you had 200 meetings, people go, you know, where are they? Let's see the evidence. So I think video makes a big difference, and I would urge you to include that. Thank you.
Okay. With that, I have no other speakers. Are there any questions that speakers generate? Any questions? All right, I still have no questions, so I guess I'm looking for some sort of action, or is that just an update?
Just an information item, Mr. Chair.
Information item, perfect. So, okay.
Thank you.
That's what we're, thank you. Thank you. To motion to move on. Thank you, Commissioner Licaro. Okay, we will move on. We will move to item 4A, which is our state legislative update. Randy?
Good morning.
Oh, Rebecca, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair Hagerty.
Much improved, Rebecca. Yeah.
Good morning, Rebecca Long, MTC staff. So just going to give you a quick overview of the state legislative update. The governor has until September 30th to take action on bills that are on his desk. And this memo just highlights bills that have reached his desk or have already been enacted. I won't go through every single one. Just note, since we were just talking about safety, that AB 1646 that we supported, requires that the driver's license test everything about the applicant's knowledge of the rules related to handheld cell phone use while driving and texting and the fact that that's not allowed. It also increases penalties in terms of getting a violation point added to your record if you do violate the law more than once on that. So that is on the governor's desk. He's vetoed bills like that in the past. This one actually at the last minute dropped the stiffer penalty. The fine is actually quite high, and this governor doesn't like high fines, so I think it has a better shot of actually getting signed this time. On express lanes, there's a couple of bills. One has already been enacted. That's AB 1811 by Assemblymember Buchanan. Another is on the governor's desk. They're virtually identical, and what these bills do is they allow express lane operators in our region and also San Diego to require that carpools have a transponder in order to use the express lane. the transponder will not charge carpools. It's just a way for the mechanism that reads the transponder to know this person, you know, is a valid user of the lane, and that way, if they're if they have the transponder, it's a switchable transponder. So if they're in carpool mode and CHP sees it turns green when they go by and actually there is no only one person in the vehicle, then it's an easier for enforcement for CHP. So it's a way of you know, making enforcement easier, basically. And MTC has supported that, and hopefully AB 2090 will also be signed. AB 2565 related to electric vehicle charging stations, another bill we supported. It makes it easier for tenants to ask their landlord if it's okay for them to actually pay for installing a charging station within the parking garage, and that makes it harder for landlords to use that as any kind of reason to, say no or evict the tenant. So hopefully makes it easier for Bay Area residents to purchase electric vehicles. And then probably the most notable bill that could have the biggest impact is SB 628 by Senator Bell. This bill is actually a bill we supported last year. It reached the governor's desk and in some strange way got pulled back. It was amended this year at the last minute, and it looks like it essentially incorporates the proposal that the governor had to establish enhanced infrastructure financing districts that could use tax increment financing. It would not include schools. We've been talking about IFDs for a number of years now, and I think the governor has finally said, you know, he's ready to revisit tax increment financing. It could also include areas that were formerly redevelopment as long as they've resolved all the debt. And the formation of the IFD does not require a vote of the people, which it does now. So that's a change. In order to issue bonds, the vote threshold would also be lower. It would be 55%. And as far as the eligible expenditures, it's very broad. It essentially includes anything that implements the sustainable community strategy. So look for hopefully a signature on that, and then we'll see if that actually can be used. And then lastly, I'll just note that SB 1077 by Senator Desaunier, the Road Usage Charge Pilot Program, has also reached the governor's desk, and it would basically just get California moving on taking a closer look at what would it really take to implement some type of road usage charge in the state. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions on any of the bills that were presented before us? Seeing none, that's an information, so we'll move to the update on the guideline development of bait and switch funding. I'm sorry, cap and trade. sorry.
We'll leave that one. Okay. So on cap and trade, we just wanted to make sure that you guys all know that there is stuff going on related to cap and trade. You know, the legislature established a number of new programs as part of the budget, and now all the administrative work is happening with the various agencies that are responsible for putting together these new grant programs. So on the first page of the memo, you see three different programs. There's the biggest one is the Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities Program. That's going to be administered by the Strategic Growth Council, and staff has been working closely trying to influence the guidelines for that before they're released. They've held a number of workshops. We're wanting to make sure that MPOs have the strongest role possible in helping to select the projects so that, you know, this isn't a completely state-run program. We think we have a lot of expertise to add to the process, considering that this is supposed to implement sustainable community strategies. And then the next two on transit, they haven't had any released any guidelines yet or much detail, but we have been we have attended the workshops and look forward to seeing actual guidelines in the next few months. And then lastly, on the disadvantaged communities piece, this isn't a new program, but as you know, there are requirements in the statute that each of the programs provide a certain benefit to disadvantaged communities, and the Air Resources Board has released their guidance as to how that benefit would be defined, and we've been working closely with transit operators and others, putting together a comment letter for that, as well as the definition or identification of the communities themselves. That comment letter is actually due next Monday. We're just putting the finishing touches on it today, and we've been working a lot with CMAs and others to make sure that they are aware of our concerns and our recommendations, and I won't go into too much detail because it is quite technical, but there is an attachment to the memo that talks about the Bay Area Air Quality Management District's proposed alternative to the identification of the communities. They've called it Method 6 because Cal EPA, they're proposing Method 1, but they did put out a document that said, well, there's another four options you could consider. Well, we don't really like any of the five options, so we've put together Method 6. And I will note the EPA's put it up on their website. They have acknowledged that, okay, there are some alternatives, so that was somewhat encouraging. And, you know, they've asked for the data, and so they're clearly taking a look at it. It doesn't jettison all of the work that Cal EPA has done thus far. It's really just a different way of putting together the data. And essentially what we're trying to do is to say, hey, you know, just because a community doesn't score high on 19 variables, you know, if they are very low income, in an area with high air pollution, you know, and have enough negative things going on in that community, we think that should count as a disadvantaged community. And when you look at the data that way, it reflects that the Bay Area has a lot more than 3% of disadvantaged communities statewide. So that's pretty much that in a nutshell. We're also asking for them to slow down a bit. They are proposing to basically resolve everything related to disadvantaged communities this month. In fact, ARB, despite the fact that the comment deadline is Monday, they're having a meeting on Wednesday to adopt their guidance. So we're hoping they would provide a little bit more time for discussion, and we will see. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
So, Rebecca, on the Cal Enviro screen, which is creating a lot of the problems, do you envision, I mean, I that's the alternative that I'm sure the Air District is talking about or I'm aware of. Do you envision that the state will get off the Cal Enviro screen, or do you think it's that? So, I mean, we're kind of stuck then, right? I mean, it really says that most of this money is going to flow to Southern California.
Well, let's see. I would say I don't think they're going to abandon the Cal Enviro screen, but the Cal Enviro screen, it's 19 variables that they can weight differently, that they can, you know, perhaps add or adjust the variables. And that's Method 6 does not say forget Cal Enviro screen. In fact, it uses all of those variables except for one. We would recommend they not use pesticides since they're only looking at agricultural pesticide and there is pesticide exposure in urban areas. So that's one change to the sort of the methodology or the input. We're also recommending that they add one piece, which is rent burden, to somewhat adjust for cost of living. Other than that, we're saying all that research and work that you've done, keep it, just put it into a different calculation so that it's more reflective of, you know, the many different ways in which a community might be disadvantaged. So, you know, I think they are open to hearing, you know, different ways of identifying the communities. Whether they're open to doing that this round remains to be seen. But yeah. So
using the Air District's thought, mm-hmm. did anybody model that to then see if the Northern California area would
Yes, we have modeled that, and we're happy to provide that to you. I mean, we've done maps, and it's much better. I mean, we it rings the bay in the same way that our communities of concern do. In terms of the number of census tracts that are covered, so under the Cal EPA's proposal, it's 46 census tracts. Under Method 6, which would set the threshold at the top 30% as well, instead of the top 20%, we get about 222 census tracts. So it's a five-fold increase, and, you know, we're hopeful that, again, if they don't do it this round, they'll revisit it in the next round.
So who did the modeling, us or the Air District?
We really have been working on it collaboratively. They've been running more of the sort of, I would say, back-end analysis, and then they've been giving it to us, and we've been using our GIS software to do the maps.
I personally would like to see the map.
Absolutely. Okay. We will provide that to you.
Commissioner, Mr. Chairman, it's actually in your packet. There's okay. a version of the map in the attachment on page 4.
I'm working from an iPad here.
Yeah.
So
I'll give you a second. But just for a comparison, I mean, okay. we don't have the map of their proposed method, but their proposed method gives us a couple of dots of color on this map. And as you can see, we've got quite a few more blocks of color. That map's in there, too. Good. Well done, Alex.
Okay.
So you can just okay. flip the page and see the two maps.
I see it now. Thank you. I apologize.
Like better.
It does look a lot better. But it also looks better for San Joaquin County, I think. I apologize. That's kind
Mr.
of.
Mr. Chairman, I think any method that's fair is going to reveal what we all know, which is that the San Joaquin Valley is the most challenged part of the state on a whole range of variables.
Right.
So the argument isn't that they shouldn't get a lot of consideration. It's that we shouldn't have a system like on page 3 that says the Bay Area has virtually no problem.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. Totally agree with that.
Now, the other thing to remember, because I know we've been awfully gloomy on this subject, the disadvantaged community set aside is not all the money. Although I think we do have to worry that the legislature seems to be in a bidding environment where they're trying to outdo each other in terms of their concern for disadvantaged communities, because some of the targets they've set in some of the programs are 100% or close to it. But in the programs that we're most concerned about, it's really in the 10 to 25% range. So that is going to leave quite a bit of room for other competitive projects, and I think we're going to do quite well in that other area. So we're just trying to make sure we've got somewhat of a level playing field throughout the programs and not just in the remaining funds.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. That's an information item also. So, I'm sorry, Commissioner Spring.
No, I not on this item, but before we go to federal.
Sure, election, go ahead. We're leaving this item.
And I don't know if this is the place to bring this up, but the violators in the HOV lanes. I mean, to me, I think it's getting just worse. Commissioner Haggerty brought this up before. I mean, when I sit there, more than half the cars have one person in them. More than half. And are there best practices somewhere else in this country? Are they doing anything legislatively? What is being done? Or is it? It's almost coming across as if we're ignoring it. Just do what you damn well please in those lanes. And I'm just curious: are you seeing that or hearing this, or is it just what we're observing?
It's not a mirage, Commissioner, and it's frankly been a continuing problem. I think of priority. With the Highway Patrol, and we have repeatedly asked them to pay more attention to this. They actually get part of the fine revenue that they generate through the activity, and we still have a difficult time, I think, getting enough focus on the question, and that is going to become more and more of a problem when we try to sell space on these lanes. And we've got to make sure that we don't have guys getting it for free when we're selling it to everybody else. I think there actually is some hope in that strategy, too, because the express lanes that do exist, I think, have managed to strike relationships with the patrol where they have dedicated enforcement activity. And that's really what we need. And whenever they do get out there, we see people obeying the law more. But I think we need that kind of dedicated attention from the Highway Patrol for the enforcement to bite.
Steve, but my question is, what are other states doing? What are other urbanized
They're enforcing
areas?
Them.
What are they doing? I mean, what's that?
They're enforcing them. I've gone to other states. I've seen how they do it, and they enforce them. I mean, I think the problem's only going to get worse as we now move towards this hot lane where you can, you know, basically move in and out of it if you want to be so bold to start moving around the transponders for payment. So the way we're moving in this state, anyways, to me says that there's going to be more opportunity for people to cheat.
And the other concern I have, it seems like the more congestion we have, the more people that are in those lanes, and we're actually defeating people carpooling. And like this morning, and Scott probably saw it where he was coming down, you know, on that 680. I mean, we're stuck in traffic, and I'm this is without exaggeration. 10 cars go by me with one person or one person.
Commissioner, I do think this issue is going to come to a head fairly soon. You may not be aware, but there are federal requirements that when you designate an HOV lane, you have to maintain a certain level of service. And the Federal Highway Administration, in fact, has been sending us increasingly nasty letters to the state of California, in part because we're not enforcing the lanes enough, in part because our legislature keeps giving away space in those lanes to, you know, low-emission vehicles and whoever else might be their favorite class of people in a given year. And we're not maintaining that free flow requirement. So maybe that will shake up the order of things a little bit, because ultimately the feds can withhold funding if states are not complying with that mandate.
So, you know, I'm happy that Jim brought this up, and I really haven't beat that drum for a couple weeks, but not only do they get a portion of the fine, but at Alameda CTC we're paying them overtime in order to enforce these lanes. And, you know, I've jokingly, or not really jokingly, but said, but it's been received as a joke, that maybe MTC should look at some sort of legislation that allows us to form an enforcement division in our toll areas. Now, Steve continues to smile when I mention that, like, don't bring me that, but maybe there needs to be a bill or a division of the CHP that actually will focus on toll evasion, because, quite frankly, it is not the priority of a CHP officer when they go to work that they're going to go sit and enforce a toll lane. It's just not. I mean, there's so much going on the infrastructure that they're chasing things all day, and I understand that, but I also believe nor can we continue to pay somebody time and a half to enforce these lanes. So we need to look at a better way of enforcement, and if it is establishing a state of California toll enforcement organization, then maybe they should do that.
Well, I do think there's an analogy there, Mr. Chairman, and that is when you look at our toll bridges and how much revenue we get and whether we have a huge leakage from violations, and you compare them to the express lanes, the toll bridges win hands down, and that's because we've got cameras. Mm-hmm. Now, cameras are a very touchy subject when it comes to enforcement. And I think you're all aware of the fact that the red light running cameras that exist in many California cities, there have been open rebellions by Superior Court judges who don't want to enforce a mobile violation with a camera. But ultimately, I think that's the answer to enforcement of the express lanes and HOV lanes, is you got to get cameras out there that take people's license plate numbers, and you can use the DMV to enforce that.
Yeah, and you know, I've been talking to these people that actually can do a detection of how many people are in the car based on the oxygen level or something in the car. I mean, it's really, really interesting stuff.
It's infrared stuff, too.
It's futuristic stuff, but there's people out there working, trying to get through this.
You know, like most things in life, it's a trade-off. And I think the more effective enforcement strategies are going to raise the privacy and intrusion questions as we head down that path.
Plus, there's probably a lot more oxygen in a politician's car. Anybody else on this? Yeah.
I think it would be more CO2, actually.
Yeah, okay, yeah, really.
That works.
Well, yeah, right. Okay, yeah. All right, so we're done with cap and trade. Okay, we'll move to federal legislation. Randy?
Well, moving from a lot of activity from Sacramento, not just at the end of the session in August, but also cap and trade, which passed in the summer, and Rebecca's outline about all that activity kind of compares starkly with the inactivity we're seeing in Washington, D.C., so this little portion is going to be brief. The two-year MAP 21 authorization bill, the fundamental transportation statutes that keep us in business, were extended through May of 2015. This is the first extension of MAP 21, and perhaps as an indication of where we're going, its predecessor was extended 12 times, and its predecessor before that was extended 10 times. So I suspect we'll get into the double digits. In fact, a play was made that's of interest, mostly by the Democratic side, to try to position this to be taken up in a lame duck session so they could actually do something, hopefully. That was frustrated. So, again, we do have our authorization extended. We're likely to see more. It was kind of a no harm, no foul extension. It didn't have any policy issues in it. But I do think for us, we're in the long march again. We would like to see a long-term extension of our transportation authorization. We'd like a freight program to be included in it. We do think they need to get serious about a revenue source because they keep taking money from the general fund. At least they've decided to take money from the general fund as opposed to cut us off. So I guess we can look at that. So in any event, that's where we are in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Did you want to leave Bulger's report for our perusal? Or
I did, but I did want to talk about the item I handed out before the meeting. The Tiger Grant was announced today, so this is a quick print of that. While I think it's interesting about the modes that they chose in that pie chart on the front, I suspect most of you are interested in the actual projects and what they did, which is these long list of things. California got about 6.5% of the money. That's not really doing all that well, frankly, when you consider the economy, the congestion, the ports, what we do. We in the Bay Area got really one grant that came to the commission that's doing a thing that you are working on, which is transit core capacity. It's been a subject of an action that you've taken in the past and a lot more work that we want to do. I do think the federal government is interested in that subject because the Federal Transit Administration is allowing these kinds of projects entrance into what traditionally has been a new starts program, an extension of a rail system, as opposed to trying to find the riders by making better its core system. So I do think we're playing into a federal interest there. But I do think we can rightfully be disappointed with this list of projects. I was speaking to Commissioner Kinsey because he got this on his email, that it seems as though the federal government is incentivizing those places around the country that aren't doing the things that you are naturally doing. And as a result, you know, it's easy to take it, you know, kind of take us for granted, which I think from the Bay Area's economic power relative to the rest of the state of California, the discussion you just had about cap and trade, I think this happens to us in the Bay Area a lot. And I think it's happening here as well. So in any event, that's just here for your information as well.
Comments? Seeing none, I apologize on 4B. I did have a speaker. The card was put down in front of me, and I didn't detect it. So Rich Hedges, we'll go back to 4B for you. Apologize.
Sorry you missed that, Commissioner Haggerty. I actually got up to agree with you.
Which is why Licaro hid the card.
I like the idea of enforcement greatly. One of the funny things that I often see when I'm traveling on transit in L.A. is the county sheriff will hit a station, and they'll have 8 or 10 sheriffs. And when they catch somebody riding free, they put them in handcuffs and stand them over for everybody to watch getting on and off of transit. And that has a large impact on people. I seldom see people not tagging on in L.A. They don't do it a lot, but when they do it, and oftentimes you'll see something on the evening news about it. So my suggestion is that we have some news people ride with the Highway Patrol and start enforcing this and getting on the evening news. Learn from the IRS. When we reach April 15th, they start running press releases on the folks that are going to jail for cheating on their taxes. I just have to tell you that I'm very troubled when I ride Muni in the city. Often get on in the back door because it's easier. I tag on. I'll see 10 or 12 people get on and not tag on. There's just a lack of enforcement, especially at peak periods where the buses are so crammed. It's easy to do if you're not an honest person. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. I was suggesting maybe a armored vehicle with a drone following behind. I'm not serious, Bukowski. All right. With that, we have no other business before this committee, so we shall adjourn until October 10th at 9:40. Thank you.